Welcome to a new series for WTUL News and Views called Access and Empowerment. This series sheds light on the contemporary convergence of crises through the historical enclosure of the commons and internalized oppressions. I'm your host, Nora, and I'll be offering this series to explore what feeds capitalism, where is primitive accumulation still happening, how do we experience enclosure in our lives, how do we understand the relationship between access and empowerment? Where and who by is community being reproduced? What aspects of community are visible and valued? Where do internalized capitalisms show up in today's movements? How have we come to experience capitalism in our bodies? The Access and Empowerment series will pose these questions by talking with local community members and exploring academic texts. In this first episode, I'm excited to feature a local event.
Beyond the Womb Veil, a forum on early female healthcare.
That's our moderator, Owen Evers, of the Cache Arts and Culture Program and the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum. In late 2014, Owen brought together Kate Paxton, certified nurse midwife, Elizabeth Celine, student of historical anthropology, working in the excavation of Storyville, Jen Stovall, herbalist and one of the owners of Maypop Herb Shop, and Rachel Speck, resident artist at Cache and member of the New Orleans Community Print Shop. This panel remembers the transition seen in women's healthcare as profit motives impacted communities of women, enslaved peoples, and indigenous groups who have used and continue to use herbs, pharmaceuticals, healthy lifestyle changes, community support, and allopathic medicine to be well.
In case you're wondering, a womb veil, what is that? So that was the precursor to the diaphragm. It everything had really fancy names. Condoms were assurance caps. The womb veil came about because, and I'll speak a little bit more to this, there was sort of a push for women wanted to take contraception into their own hands because condoms were things that pretty much only the wealthy could access. And since they were pretty much made out of like leather and, lambskin that was treated with lye and sulfur, they often had holes and would fall apart. And men had actually to be fitted by doctors, and then the doctors would send the measurements and order them. So most people, whether they were lacking like the education about trying to have those or the funds to get them, didn't have them. And so there were a lot of women who were like, we need to try to invent something. And so then the womb veil became really popular and continued to be one of the most popular forms of female contraception throughout the 19th century and into the 20th century.
Thank you to Owen for providing the full audio of the Beneath the Womb Veil panel. Today we'll just be focusing on one question, but we'll be hearing a lot more from Kate, Elizabeth, Jen, Rachel, and Owen in later episodes. If you're eager to hear the full audio, you're welcome to go to Goat in the Road Productions for their podcast. Rachel Speck poses the question for today's episode.
Looking at the historical development of pharmaceuticals, it seems that there has been a tremendous shift where originally only upper class could afford pharmaceuticals, while lower class and slaves relied on herbalism and alternative practices. This changed at some point, with over-the-counter medicines, pharmaceuticals used heavily by lower classes, and alternative medicines used heavily by the wealthy. What do you think enabled this shift? What really do you feel happened and why?
I'm going to jump in.
That's Jen Stovall.
So hi, I'm Jen Stovall. I am one of the owners at Maypop Herb Shop. I'm going to jump in because I actually am teaching a class on this topic. And the first part is really going to be all about the history of medical oppression and herbalism. And so really talking about a little bit of what Owen touched on with eugenics and a history of forced sterilization. And how a lot of our surgeries these days, such as C-sections, a lot of other surgeries, especially gynecological surgeries, how these were all originally figured out by performing on slaves who were unwilling. There's a lot of history of people having a slave who was sick, who wasn't feeling well, who maybe had like some sort of gynecological issue, that they were having, and so then they go and talk to the local doctor, who's maybe just another slave owner who like wants to learn how to practice medicine and just takes slaves because they didn't have feeling. They don't feel the same way white people did, was kind of the notion at the time. And so they would perform these surgeries on them without anesthesia. I'm going to delve into this whole history. That's a lot of what we're going to talk about, Tuskegee experiments, everything like that. From there, how herbal medicine was always a tool in the hands of the people. Like, it was always something that people just knew how to work with, that people were also really close to, that people had access to, that people had knowledge of. And since then, it really has changed a lot. And now it's, you know, as you know, you can go to Walgreens and everything you get might have like some lavender or some chamomile. You know, everybody knows all these words. But because of that, a lot of these medicines have become inaccessible to marginalized populations. Whereas it used to always be tools in the hands of the people, now it's really much more accessible only to people who have enough education and money to afford it. A lot of what we're going to teach about, too, is just how people can take that knowledge back and how we can, how people who don't have money can work with herbs and still stay connected to the plants. I think that there's tools that we can use to support people through putting to gathering those tools back in our own hands, but I think it would take a lot of work because it's definitely a mainstream commodity these days.
Elizabeth, I'm going to give it away to you.
Thanks, Owen. My work, I'm finishing up a degree in the anthropology department, actually. My focus has been on historic archaeology. A lot of times when you say archaeology, people go straight to, you know, Indiana Jones. But within the previous decades, there's been an approach to archaeology in the historic context, looking at areas of society where people did have documented records, where we're not too far off generationally to still have oral stories and traditions passed down to us. And historic archaeology looks at that intertextuality between the artifact and between the written document. And typically, we tend to go towards communities that weren't as dominant in the written record. I'm sure you've all heard the phrase that history is recorded by the winners. And we go back in and retrace steps and look for those lost voices in the historic narrative.
Looking at the historical development of pharmaceuticals, it seems that there has been a tremendous shift where originally only upper class could afford pharmaceuticals, while lower class and slaves relied on herbalism and alternative practices. This changed at some point, with over-the-counter medicines, pharmaceuticals used heavily by lower classes, and alternative medicines used heavily by the wealthy. What do you think enabled this shift? What really do you feel happened and why?
Yeah, it is a really good question. And in my work, it does get complicated by like the nature of structure versus agency, trying to kind of piece together how women were working within the dominant society and how they were navigating around what was socially prescribed, legally prescribed, medically prescribed, and just looking at what sort of access women had. Would they have had, you know, a greater access to the corner pharmacy? Would they have been able to afford the items from there? Would they have had, you know, access to the more traditional folkways? And also having to look at education, and there's just so many factors that can go into that question. It is hard to, you know, draw a particular moment in history where this switch occurs, but we do see evidence of it and can sort of trace and get a general knowledge. And kind of going back earlier into looking at the literature and the writing about how we see disease and a lot of those switches from the more traditional to the more regimented pharmaceutical does occur with those shifts from believing that disease is caused by, you know, miasmas and this and that to recognizing virus and bacteria.
One of my collaborators is Kate Paxton, sitting right here. Kate is a certified nurse, midwife. She's a doula, nurse, and midwife. And she has been practicing. You've been attending births for 10 years, correct? And she's been a midwife for 5 and has delivered about 500 babies, which is incredible. And so we've been doing a lot of history specific to the history of, a lot of research specific to the history of midwifery and gynecology and obstetrics, primarily in Louisiana and in the American South.
The education of both midwives and doctors in the 1800s. So neither of them had a lot of science to go on with childbirth. The midwives didn't use the heroic medicines. They were using herbs and basically traditional mothering techniques. But they learned, at least apprenticed under other midwives, and then learned from them, went to more than, say, three births, which is oftentimes about the maximum of what physicians were observing, oftentimes underneath sheets during medical school. So that's the basis of where we start from. So when medicine started to realize that there was a lot of money to be made from childbirth, they developed a very virulent campaign against midwives. It's quite strategic. And Barbara Ehrenreich, Midwives and Nurses, goes very into detail on all of the strategic. That they shut down all of the medical schools of people of color, all of the medical schools that included women, and basically isolated all. They approved only the ones that were full of upper middle class white men. And then there was a very strategic public campaign accusing midwives of being immigrant, dirty, old, witchy crones. You don't want them to touch you. You don't want them to come close to you. And to this day, people come to my office and go, "Yeah, my family just thinks I'm so crazy for being here." So there was a very specific campaign, and it's well documented in the literature. And I think that was one of the major shifts was during that whole campaign.
Thank you, panelists.
Thank you for listening to WTUL News and Views' new series called Access and Empowerment. We're shedding light on the contemporary convergence of crises through the historical enclosure of the commons and internalized oppressions. I'm your host, Nora. I am thankful to Owen, Kate, Elizabeth, Jen, and Rachel for offering the full audio for their Beneath the Womb Veil, a Forum on Early Female Healthcare event that took place in late 2014. It was an event brought to us by the Cache Arts and Cultural Program and the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum. Today we listened to a question by Rachel Speck. Looking at the historical development of pharmaceuticals, it seems that there has been a tremendous shift where originally only upper class could afford pharmaceuticals, while lower class and slaves relied on herbalism and alternative practices. This changed at some point with over-the-counter medicines and pharmaceuticals used heavily by lower classes and alternative medicines used heavily by the wealthy. Rachel asked the panelists, what do you think enabled this shift? What really do you feel happened and why? If you're looking for the full audio from the Beneath the Womb Veil panel, Goat in the Road Productions has it as the number 4 podcast, and you're welcome to listen to the unedited audio there. We'll be hearing a lot more from the Beneath the Womb Veil panelists as we keep moving in our new series, Access and Empowerment. Thank you again for tuning in.